Hello and welcome back to the MJA podcast. My name is Kate Swanell. The recent leaking of a New South Wales coroner's report has put pill testing back on the agenda. Researchers from the University of Wollongong and the Illawarra Health and Medical Research Institute have called on governments to reconsider their so far entrenched anti-pill testing policies in an article published today in the MJA. One of the authors, Dr. Jodie Moller, is my special guest today. Pill testing seems to be, on the outside, a perfectly obvious thing to do to reduce harm, but governments are shying away from it, as you say in your paper. Australians seem to really love MDMA, don't they?
They certainly do, particularly young Australians, and particularly young Australians who attend music festivals and who attend dance music nightclubs. So if we look at the numbers for use of MDMA, a survey of attendees at an Australian music festival found that 73.4% of attendees reported drug taking, compared to 28.2% of the general population. And that's even more staggering if you compare it just for MDMA, where we get 59.8% of attendees have consumed MDMA, where only 7% of the general population have. So the results are quite significant when you're looking at the number of young people that are actually using ecstasy when they go out to these types of locations. It is relatively fast acting. So particularly, obviously, depends on the form that you're going to be consuming.
Sure.
But it is a relatively fast-acting drug. It is also one of the reasons it doesn't last for a very, very long time, however, which is one of the reasons that a lot of young people consume large quantities of it. So
right.
They quite often take more than a single pill on an occasion.
And that's more than the average worldwide, isn't it, in Australia?
Absolutely. So Australians are actually one of the highest nations in the world. I believe they're actually the highest nation in the world, according to the 2019 Global Drug Survey. Australians are taking more pills on a single occasion than people in any other country in the world. The simultaneous consumption of two ecstasy pills, which is known as double dropping, is actually really, really common in Australia. The problem is if you get an unusually high dose, in the particular pill that you have on that occasion, and you immediately take two pills without any consideration as to what the dosage you may be consuming is, obviously you're significantly increasing your risk under those circumstances. And under those circumstances, these people have no indication of what the strength is in the particular pills that they're consuming.
What does an overdose look like?
Basically, your body gets really hot initially. So you have a hypothermia response, and the hypothermia is actually what induces the seizures. So your body can't regulate its temperature, and you start having seizures. Once you've started having seizures, your salts get out of balance in your body, and then you actually start having organ failure, and that's the cause of death. It's one of the reasons why water is now a requirement to be supplied at music festivals so that these people are able to hydrate themselves. So that has been a recognised harm reduction strategy to make free water available to all people at a music festival so that they can regulate their hydration. But by the same token, too much water is actually also is also a problem. So they need to be really, really careful as to how much water they're consuming while they're taking these types of pills.
Because that also presumably messes with your salts. Do we know if the kids are buying this stuff at the festivals themselves, or are they buying it before they get there?
There is, it's a split. There's, it's generally, I believe, about half are bringing it in with them, but a significant proportion are actually purchasing it on the ground. Obviously, that has to do with the fear of taking drugs in, for fear of being caught. So it is actually approximately an even split.
Okay.
And then in addition to that, we believe there's also a group of people who are bringing the drugs with them and consuming them outside, sometimes in large doses, in order to avoid detection on the way into the festival.
And what are the chances of adulteration of the drugs?
There is really no data to tell you exactly how often these drugs are being adulterated. By adulteration, we obviously mean just alterations to contain something other than what you were expecting. So the Loop in the UK have done a lot of analysis on this. So they are a pill testing group that goes to the large music festivals across across the UK. They found that at one festival in 2016, they found about 19.5%, so almost 20% of samples, contained something other than what they were expecting. And that ranged from being a completely different psychoactive substance, something that is more dangerous, something like ethylpentalone or PMA, which is paramethoxyamphetamine, or in some cases, I believe they actually found concrete powder
as the adulterant.
So there were some pills that contained only fillers, so no active ingredients at all, and some that contained just general household ingredients that you really shouldn't be consuming anyway.
Pill testing. How does pill testing happen?
Okay, so I guess part of the reason we wanted to put this paper together is we really want to start talking about what a best practice system would look like. And what we believe a best practice system looks like. So I've gone through the evidence of all of the different types of pill testing that they have around the globe, mm-hmm. and we've really condensed out what the benefits of each of those systems are. And we believe a best practice system needs to be a system where you actually have a face-to-face interaction with someone who can either be a medical health professional
yes.
or a drug and alcohol counsellor.
Mm-hmm.
So someone who is experienced with speaking to people involved in drug and alcohol. So basically what would happen is you would take your pill that you wanted to get tested and you would supply that to a desk at the front of the testing service. They would take a small sample and they would use that small sample to put it through their testing devices, whatever instrumentation that happened to be.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment in Australia, at the group, the Moo trials that were held this year and last year, that was using an FTIR system, but there are other systems available. They would basically test that drug and they would come up with a decision as to what that drug contained. And in a best practice system, which you can't currently do with the FTI methodology that they're using, you would also come up with a gauge on how concentrated that particular drug was.
Right.
Because obviously a lot of the recent deaths have actually been through high doses of MDMA and
yes.
not just through adulteration with other drugs.
Right.
So having an idea of how concentrated the drug is and what sort of dosage that is also going to be a very useful piece of information.
So does that technology exist currently?
Could be done, yes. So the Loop in the UK do provide dosage information. They obviously don't tell you that your drug is, 100 milligrams. They just provide you with whether it's a high-risk dose or a usual dose. So they actually have to run their things through several different instruments at the moment. So they use a combination of FTIR and UV,
mm-hmm.
And they do spot tests as well, and TLC.
Okay.
So they have a whole range of different instruments that they're using. More recent technology, so they now have... So GCMS, which is gas chromatography, mass spectrometry, is considered the sort of gold standard of analytical techniques. It has always been said it couldn't be used under these sorts of circumstances because they're not portable. They're huge devices, very expensive,
yeah.
Take up a whole, have to sit on a huge bench. But in the last sort of 12 months to 2 years, portable devices have actually been developed.
Yes.
So there's the potential that could be moved. And one of the things we actually are calling for with this paper is that funding be provided to actually perform an analysis to try and see what type of techniques could produce the best results under these circumstances, because there has been no research done anywhere in the world. Everyone just uses the technique that they already have available to them
yes.
with the equipment that they already have available to them, because everyone is under such tight monetary constraints.
Mm.
The Loop, for example, is a complete non-for-profit volunteer organisation. So all of the people that are working on all of the instrumentation at their festivals are completely volunteers. So they fundraise purely to provide solvents and disposable equipment and the instrumentation that they're using.
I'm chatting with Dr. Jody Moller about pill testing and the need for a renewed conversation about harm reduction policies. You can find Jody's co-authored perspective at the MJA website, mja.com.au, where it is open access for 1 week. Don't forget, you can find all of our podcasts on iTunes or on our website at mja.com.au/podcasts. Back to our chat. So the benefits of pill testing seem to be fairly self-evident. You know, you're telling the consumer what they've bought and they can then make a decision about whether they want to risk it or not.
I think the biggest thing to stress when we talk about one of that interaction that we want to have between the healthcare professional and the patron that would be using the pill testing is that these are people that have, for the most part, never spoken to a healthcare professional. The study with that same company in the UK, The Loop, found that 9 out of 10 users had never spoken to a healthcare professional about their drug use. So this is a group of people who are probably taking drugs on a what they would call casual basis. They're recreational users only when they go out to these music nightclubs, to music festivals or to nightclubs. And they don't believe that when they go for their checkup with their GP that that is something that they need to mention. This is actually a really unique opportunity to speak directly to those people and explain to them exactly what harms these drugs are doing to their body and what risks they are taking by consuming these drugs. The pill testing process is not endorsing drug taking by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
It is genuinely telling these people drug taking is bad. You are putting something in your body, and even if we give you some guidance as to what might be in it, you still don't know that that is going to be safe for you to take. It is not a regulated medicine. We do not recommend that you take it. But here is some guidance as to what that may contain. And obviously, particularly when there's adulterants or very, very high concentrations of MDMA, the healthcare professional that was having that conversation would urge that person even more strongly than normal to really not take those drugs. And we would recommend that there is also associated with your pill testing facility a disposal service available, so that those patrons can dispose of those drugs with absolutely no criminal implications whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So they can come in, they can have their drugs tested, they can dispose of those drugs. And obviously there then needs to be an arrangement with a police force to remove the drugs from the site.
I mean, we know how the politicians feel. I mean, it's become a political football. Do we know how law enforcement feels about pill testing?
The current official stance is that they are not supporting pill testing. However, there are certain people like the former Australian Federal Police Commissioner, mm-hmm. Mick Palmer, who has come out publicly and said that he supports pill testing. In fact, the number of people and groups that are now supporting it is increasing quite significantly. So the Royal Australasian College of Physicians are now in support. The Australian Medical Association is in support.
Yes.
The Uniting Church came out recently and said they are now in support of pill testing. And obviously the Greens political party have been strong advocates of this for quite a long time.
We know harm reduction is one of the three pillars of the national drug strategy, the others being supply reduction and demand reduction. What are the arguments against pill testing? What are they arguing exactly?
Gladys Berejiklian, who the current New South Wales Premier, has been very, very vocal in her stance against it. And her major claim is that it gives people a false sense of security that what they are taking is safe. But as the people that would be performing the pill testing and as the medical professionals that would be providing the information,
yep.
every single person that is involved in this has said very, very vocally, at no point are they told
yes.
what they are doing is safe. There is no level at which these drugs are deemed safe. They are illicit drugs and they are going to be dealt with in exactly that manner. However, having the ability to speak to someone and tell them what signs to look for, so in the case of a potential overdose, tell them to be able to tell them what to do if they feel like that they may not be feeling well after they've taken a pill. That sort of information and that ability to have a one-on-one consultation with someone, that's invaluable because you can't contact these types of people in any other way. There's no facility by which we can generally go out to the general population and say, can I just have all of the ecstasy users over here, please, so I can talk to you? It really provides a very, very useful opportunity to
yes.
have that one-on-one interaction.
Yes. Does zero tolerance work?
Well, I think it's pretty evident from the fact that we've had a zero tolerance policy for a very long time. And over that time period, there has been absolutely no decrease in the rates of people using various types of illicit drugs. That we know for a fact zero tolerance policies are not going to work for every single person. They are particularly not going to work for young people because young people think they are invincible. And for the same reasons that we tell them not to speed and they still speed in cars, and the same reasons that we tell them not to drink alcohol and get in a car and they still do,
mm-hmm.
And the same reasons we tell them not to use their phone while they're driving, but they still do, they feel like they're Superman and they feel like nothing can harm them and that they're invincible. I don't know how we can put our older adult brains onto young people. It would be lovely if we would, and then we wouldn't have to have this conversation
mm-hmm.
because there wouldn't be an issue with young people taking drugs.
Yeah.
But there is. and it is an ongoing problem. And I can't see a foreseeable future where it isn't an ongoing problem. Unfortunately for our society, I can't see a point in time where we can say, well, we fixed that problem because we said that drugs were illegal and everyone stopped taking them. Until that point, we really need to make sure we are investing money and effort into all three of those pillars. And at the moment, the disparity between the amount of money that is being invested into reducing the demand of drugs, that is policing and that aspect of drug and reducing the supply and of the drugs, versus the amount that is being invested into harm reduction, is absolutely staggering.
If you had a magic wand, Jodie, what would you do right now?
I would convince the government and the leaders of our political parties that this is something that is a direct harm reduction strategy with clear benefits. And I think the other thing that is forgotten is we're not just talking about saving people's lives. While that is obviously a huge component of it, we're not just talking about death. If you can have a pill testing facility, you are also hopefully significantly reducing the number of medical emergencies that are going to be occurring at these types of festivals as well. So the drain, therefore, on your medical staff at the location, your paramedics, your emergency rooms, your ICU, all of which then go into play every time someone has an overdose. All of that is reduced for every single person that isn't consuming something. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something we do need to note, is people genuinely are not consuming bad drugs after they get them checked. So at the Groove the Moo Festival this year, they found 7 different samples that contained N-ethyl pentylone. 6 of those people disposed of it on site, and the other one said that he would dispose of it off site. These people genuinely aren't consuming the drugs. If they're told it contains something that is not the MDMA they thought it was, they are getting rid of the drugs. Recently, I attended the National Drug and Alcohol Research Centre 2019 annual symposium, and Amy Peacock from NDARC spoke at that, and she was giving the most recent findings from their drug trends analysis that they do every year. And as part of that, they actually were doing some analysis on people asking questions about whether people had used pill testing in the past year. This data is actually from the Ecstasy and Related Drugs Reporting System survey. So that's actually a survey specifically targeted at people that regularly use ecstasy. And in that, they found that 36% of the respondents had used some type of drug checking in the past 12 months. So what that means is these people are already doing their best to try and work out what is in their drugs, spending their own money. And of those, 87% use just the personal chemical identification kits. So these colorimetric testing kits that you can get, they are all that is available to the general public. Yeah. I'll be honest, they're not very good. You're not going to be identifying any of the high-risk psychoactive substances. You are not going to... It also will give you a false positive for some things, and you will also generally just get the positive for whatever the majority drug is in there. It's not going to tell you if there are other adulterants in there either. People know that's all that is available to them, so they are using it. And it really bodes very positively for the idea that if we did introduce a pill testing system, it would be used by the general public and it would be taken up.
Tell us about that coroner's report.
The coroner report, following on from the deaths of 5 Australians over the previous summer, and there was one additional death in 2017 that was also examined. And the coroner's report was recently leaked. It's not due to be released until partway through November. But the report that has been leaked basically says that the coroner is recommending that pill testing be allowed, that sniffer dogs are scrapped as a method of detection, that the people aren't punished for personal consumption. Obviously, that is significant changes to the current policy. Clearly, from what our paper says and from the stance that we have, we are particularly encouraged that the coroner, Harriet Graham, has realised that pill testing is a really positive step forward in a harm reduction strategy.
Thank you, Jodie.
Okay, thanks very much, Kate.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.